After close elections in 2000 and 2004, there were allegations of voter fraud and voting irregularities in several states, Ohio among them. Polls indicate that the margin of victory in this year's presidential campaign may be just as narrow, and all eyes are on swing states, and again, including Ohio. In just a moment, Ohio Secretary of State joins us. If you have questions about how this state has prepared and is preparing for the election, which is already underway, voting began last week, give us a call. Our number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And joining us now, Ohio's Chief Elections Officer, the Secretary of State, Jennifer Bruner. She's in the studios of Ohio Public Radio at the State House in Columbus. And Secretary Bruner, thanks very much for your time today.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Should Americans, and specifically people in Ohio, be worried about election problems come November 4th?
No, there is a lot of hype because we have some record numbers of voter registration this year. Voting has already started, and we anticipate that there will be about 80% of our registered voters who do vote either before or on Election Day.
80%? That's a tremendous turnout.
Well, in 2004, we had about 75% statewide, which meant some counties were actually over that 80% number. And when you averaged it out statewide, I don't think that's unexpected for this year.
We were on one of the local programs yesterday at WOSU in Columbus and got a lot of people calling in to say they're really worried about the security of the election machines themselves.
We performed a massive study of all of the voting systems in Ohio. We concluded as a result of the study that there are security problems the way the machines are engineered. Unfortunately, our state legislature was not in a position or did not have the political will to provide the state with money to move to an all-paper ballot system. So we took some important steps to make sure that we could account for some of the difficulties we identified. We have security plans in place for each county board of elections. We have best security practices we developed with a bipartisan team of election officials that cover the transport of the voting equipment, the ballots, the memory cards, as well as what the minimum server settings would be, security at the polling places, as well as security at the Board of Elections. And this year, in the 53 counties where the touchscreen machines are in use, we will have backup paper ballots at the level of 25% of the number of people who voted in the 2004 general election.
Now, you said there were design problems with some of the machines. Design problems, just bad engineering, or is this evidence of some deep, dark conspiracy?
We think it was a combination of Congress wanting the entire country to change its voting systems in 4 years, which is a very, very difficult prospect. Voting machine companies rushing to see the opportunities to sell massive numbers of equipment to the states and inadequate development of the systems. As a result, the voting machines that are in use really don't measure up to normal computer industry standards that we would expect in transportation or banking or communication.
But what you're saying is you don't see evidence of a conspiracy here.
I think that a lot of people want to assign nefarious reasons to why this occurred. When you go back to 2004, unfortunately, the CEO of one of the voting machine companies signed a letter that I'm told was prepared for him by the Ohio Republican Party, saying that essentially he would do just about anything to ensure that President Bush was reelected. That was very unfortunate because from there, the conspiracies abounded.
Now, on the other side, there are a lot of Republicans who wonder about voter fraud, and they fought vigorously against the idea that voters could register and vote on the same day. We talked about that one-week period that overlapped. That period is now over, but nevertheless, how would you know if somebody, well, let's just make up a hypothetical student here at Ohio University, if they were registered here in Ohio and also registered in their home state of New York, just to make up a place, could they vote twice?
Well, you know what's ironic about that, Neil, is that the Ohio Senate has been controlled by the Republicans for 24 years, and the Ohio House has been controlled by the Republicans for 14 years. Now, what this group of folks did when they passed the no-fault absentee voting is they didn't really talk to the other side, a lot of last-minute amendments, and they didn't listen when there was opposition voiced to some of the aspects of this law. And they ended up with an overlap of absentee voting occurring before the close of voter registration, which has been something that's been usual in the law since 1981, but at that time, absentee voting was only for specific people with specific reasons. But what happens when a person registers to vote is that a notice is sent to them at the address from which they registered. If that notice comes back, for instance, if we've got a student who voted during that 5 to 7 day window period, that ballot has already been segregated. It's been voted on a paper ballot, which the ballot secrecy is maintained because it's inside of an envelope and the identification information is on the outside of the envelope. That ballot would come into question and election officials would investigate. Now, if the student also tries to vote in their home state of New York, at this point, the states do not have an interstate compact, at least Ohio doesn't, like you would with, for instance, motor vehicle boards. There are some Midwest states that formed one, and when I came into office, I talked to neighboring states to see if we could do that, but for some of those, it was not administratively feasible, and for others, they just didn't seem to be interested. If that were discovered, which is very rare, they would be prosecuted.
Okay, let's see if we can get some callers in on the conversation. Again, we're talking with Jennifer Bruner, the Secretary of State of Ohio, who's with us from Ohio Public Radio at the State House in Columbus. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And why don't we start with somebody here in the audience in Athens, Ohio.
Hi, Neil. I'm Jeff Callan. I live here in Athens. I think Jennifer Bruner answered a couple of these questions, but why is it so difficult to track registered voters? How does an unregistered voter manage to get into a polling station to vote? How is it that registered voters vote more than once? I find it difficult to understand how the voting system can be perceived as so vulnerable. Is it?
Well, why don't we just focus on that last one, because there's a whole laundry list there. Is the voting system vulnerable?
No voting system is perfect, but our boards of elections are very conscientious. And you have distinct differences between the large urban areas and between the rural areas. It's not unusual, even in an urban area, if the Board of Elections has a question about a voter's eligibility, about something on their application, about any type of discrepancy, that sometimes they pick up the phone and they call the voter and say, we've got this problem, we may need you to come in and straighten this out. Oftentimes, the Boards of Elections will take the extra step that if something isn't correct, they'll not only send it back to the voter, but highlight what's not correct and even send them a new application. One of the things that we did when we revised our instructions to the Boards of Elections on voter purges under the National Voter Registration Act is to tell a Board of Elections that if you get a notice that someone has moved to another county when you're doing this very detailed, involved check, let the Secretary of State's office know, and then our office sends that person a new voter registration form, because we want people to have the opportunity to participate. And when, as I said before, when someone does register to vote, there is a confirmation notice sent to that voter at their address so that we can make sure that that is, in fact, a legitimate voter and one who is eligible to vote at that residence and on the issues that would appear and the candidates that would appear on that ballot.
Thanks. We'll try to get to some of those other questions. Maybe other callers will ask about them. Why don't we go now to Debbie? And Debbie's with us from Criola. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, Criola in Ohio. Go ahead, please.
My question is, what would the security be for someone that votes early? I voted early last week, and there wasn't really anywhere to put my ballot when I was finished.
What county is Criola in, Debbie?
In Vinton County.
Okay, you're in the smallest, least populous county in the state.
Right.
You're very special. So there should be a ballot box for you to put that in, or I'm sure you put your ballot in an envelope and then filled out the envelope, correct?
That's correct. And then I walked into a different room and was told to just give it to someone who put it on a table that was piled high with other papers. So I'm a little concerned that my vote might get lost.
You should be able to check with that Board of Elections to find out if they still have your ballot, if they show you as being voted, because when they prepare their poll list to take out to the polling locations, your name will appear, on some precinct list, and they should have marked that list with a notation that you already voted an absentee ballot.
Okay.
We try very hard to do a good job training our boards of elections and make sure they follow instructions. But when I hear things like this, that board will probably get a phone call.
Oh, great.
Okay, Debbie, now you've got them in trouble.
And myself, I'm sure.
Okay, thanks very much for the call, Debbie. We hope your vote is counted.
Me too, thank you.
We're talking with Jennifer Bruner, the Secretary of State here in Ohio, about questions that cropped up every year in the last 8 years about voting irregularities in the state and whether they may be repeated this time around in what's expected to be another close election. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. Email talk@npr.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another questioner on the mic here in Athens.
I'm Jay Wamsley from Athens. 4 years ago, I worked in Columbus with election protection, monitoring polling places. The sites in low-income and minority neighborhoods had too few machines and two-hour lines. The ones in the suburbs had way more machines and no lines. What's being done statewide to prevent that this time?
And just let me say, the subtext of that is that the urban inner-city areas were expected to be largely Democratic voters, and the suburban areas where there were more machines were expected to be Republican voters for the most part.
And then late in the afternoon, they went to court, and the Franklin County head of Board of Elections testified that he was surprised there was a large turnout.
Secretary Bruner?
We are acutely aware of that, and we never want to see a repeat of what happened in 2004, especially in Franklin County and in Knox County and in Cuyahoga County. We recognize from looking at the Franklin and the Knox County situations that a lot of that was simple supply and demand issues where not good enough planning went in to anticipate the number of voters, and there simply weren't enough machines for people to vote. One of the things that we did this year was to issue instructions and guidelines to the boards of elections on how they should allocate voting machines, specifying first that there should be, especially with the touchscreen electronic voting machines, a minimum of one machine per 175 voters. But we also told the boards to look at issues of new registrations, purges, recent turnout, as well as the number of ballot issues appearing on the ballot, because that does slow voters down. We've told the boards that by mid-October they are to post how many voting machines they will be using in each precinct, and if it does not follow the Secretary of State guidelines, why they're not meeting that. Now, as an additional safety net for those counties using the DRE, the touchscreen machines, they have to have backup paper ballots that can be offered to a voter if the lines are too long, if the machines break down, or if a voter simply prefers that. And we also recognize that if you have two lines going to one cash register, if you're at a store or at a McDonald's, it's not going to move any faster. So we've required those boards, unless it's a very small precinct, to develop a two-line system so that a voter can peel off of the machine line, get into the paper ballot line, and we can keep the voting going.
That answer your question?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Cool, thanks. It does raise, though, a broader issue. Do you think it is appropriate? A lot of the questions raised, because, as you mentioned, the Secretary of State was in Republican hands 4 years ago, and now that has changed parties. But shouldn't the election process be in nonpartisan hands, do you think?
You're asking someone who got elected by, nominated by a political party, and I really like my job. So, you know, I've talked to my boards of elections about this. The way that the law sets up boards of elections, the boards are governed by two Republicans and two Democrats, or if we had another party that was a major political party, it's the two most major political parties. And then when you have a Secretary of State who can break tie votes at boards of elections and is the chief election officer, they're going to be, by default, one party or another. And so someone will always question that. But what's unfortunate was in 2004, the Secretary of State dishonored what was an unwritten, time-honored rule for the Secretary of State in Ohio, which was do not express your support for one candidate or another. Do not express your support for a state issue, and especially don't become a chair of one of their committees or a spokesperson for the committee. And when that happened, it caused people to lose a lot of trust and have a lot of doubt in the election process, especially with a high turnout election like 2004, where there are going to be problems and issues. I think the Ohio voters in 2005 rejected moving election supervision to a board that would be more nonpartisan or bipartisan with an appointed election supervisor. And I, for one, prefer the better accountability so that if the voters don't like the job the Secretary of State does, the voters can certainly speak their minds at the next election.
We just got a minute left, and I wanted to go through two questions, if we could, very quickly. Today's New York Times, this is an email from Doff in Philadelphia. Today's New York Times has an article saying many states have illegally been purging voters from registration rolls by using Social Security data. Has Ohio engaged in this process?
No, it's been just two states. There were six states listed, and unfortunately for Ohio, the Social Security Administration informed us that we've been making too many inquiries, but Ohio does not purge on that basis.
And the ACLU also filed a suit today called on the Justice Department to force states to comply with federal election laws, including the state of Ohio. Is this that same issue we're talking about?
I don't believe so. There's litigation in Ohio about the use of this voter data, but the ACLU's on our side in that one.
Okay, Jennifer Bruner, thank you so much for your time today. We know you're busy and getting busier every day. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Jennifer Bruner, Secretary of State here in Ohio with us from the studios of Ohio Public Radio in the State House in Columbus, Ohio. By the way, we've received a lot of emails about offensive remarks shouted by McCain supporters at McCain-Palin rallies. This is an issue we'll talk about more next week on Talk of the Nation, so please be patient with us if you would. I'm Neil Conan. We've been broadcasting today from the campus of Ohio University and the studios of the WOUB radio network. Thanks to everybody here. We appreciate your patience with us and the kindness you've shown to your visitors. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.